The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with SuperValue Travel Insurance. Don't worry about a thing with great value travel insurance online at supervalue.ie.
Now, we've all heard of it, but what exactly is a midlife crisis? In fact, does it even exist, or is it just a myth? Well, Sinead Moriarty knows everything. No, sorry, Sinead Moriarty's got a new novel. It's called The Way We Were. It details a husband's midlife crisis and how it affects his wife and children and possibly changes their lives forever. I'm basically saying possibly because I don't want to give away the ending. But anyway, you might just think that she knows a thing or two about all the idea of midlife crises. Sinead, welcome to the programme, do you?
Gosh, pressure's on. Midlife crisis is one of the themes in my new book, The Way We Were. I do think, statistically, men have a midlife crisis at 43 and women at 44. The male midlife crisis tends to last between 3 and 10 years and the female one, 2 to 5.
Wow, they've worked all that out, yeah?
Yeah, apparently so. But I mean, all you have to do is drive around, you see a lot of sort of men in their 40s and 50s wearing tight lycra and cycling. That's definitely part of
it. But hold on a second, crisis. Cycling is the new golf.
Yeah,
discuss.
Okay. No, true.
It is.
I think golf clothes probably more flattering, perhaps.
Really? You must be joking. Have you ever watched the PGA,
not quite as tight, maybe.
Yeah, right, indeed.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, look, in the book, Ben, the main male character, just is feeling restless. I think a lot of men start feeling restless sort of mid-40s, kind of think, is this it? And kind of crave adventure and sort of spontaneity that they feel they've lost because they're bogged down with mortgages and family and children and all that kind of thing. And in The Way We Were, what he does is he gets an opportunity. He's a surgeon. He gets an opportunity to go and operate in Eritrea in Africa, which is obviously a very dangerous part of Africa. And his wife doesn't want him to go, but he goes. And that changes their life because he doesn't come back. He's presumed dead. She gets on with her life, picks up the pieces, obviously, and has to change because she has to become stronger and to manage, you know, her business and her children. He, in fact, is kidnapped and 2 years later comes back. So it's really about when you have to change, obviously dramatically, to deal with your situation and you come back to your wife of 20 years, can you get back to the way you were? Or have you changed so much that you can't? You have to just call it a day.
Okay, hold on a second. I'm just thinking, that's box set stuff. I mean, after 10 programmes, it would be that he is either dead, supposedly, or he is not dead, and then you have to wait the next year till the next 10 programs.
So, and I've just given away.
No, but I'm just saying. I mean, does it ever go as far as? I mean, you're on your 11th or 12th now at this stage of the game. Yeah. Could it go as far as that in terms of Hollywood knocking on the door?
God, well, listen, wouldn't that be lovely? But you know, funny enough, the background to this book is I was kind of obsessed with the whole Brian Keane and John McCarthy when they were, you know, kidnapped and taken hostage.
That's 25 years ago now.
It's late 80s, And when John McCarthy came out, he had this like lovely English rose of a girlfriend who was campaigning tirelessly for his release.
That.
Jill Morell, right? And everyone thought they were going to get married and walk off into the sunset. Whereas in fact, they broke up.
He
married someone else. So I kind of was uninterested in that because, you know, fundamentally, I think he had changed so much and she changed so much they actually couldn't make it work. So that was kind of the original idea I had for the book, and I kind of tried to work it into my story. So really, until the very last chapter, you don't know if they're going to make it or not. So just that's kind of just a, kind of an interesting part of it. But you know, yes, I mean, midlife crisis is the reason that he goes to Eritrea and takes the risk because he just craves something
else. Okay, having said that, that's a midlife crisis. That's almost a good one. I mean, like, that's not as bad as someone. That's not. I mean, what do people do in midlife? I presume it manifests itself very differently in men than women.
Well, I think women kind of look more to the long game. With men, I think it's sort of mid-40s, they kind of think, is this it? And they're also sort of panicking about their own mortality, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, there was
yeah.
an interview with Jamie Oliver this weekend, and he was saying that he's begun to panic about his mortality and he's lost weight and he's gone to a sleep clinic because he can't sleep properly. He's trying to sort of get really fit and healthy.
But you also lose people, you know, a grandfather or a friend or a parent dies, you know?
Absolutely.
And that can knock a few doors and put a few light bulbs over your head. I mean, what about the other ones of, like, you know, looking up ex-partners on Facebook and that kind of thing? That's what happens there, doesn't it? Or taking vitamin pills. That's the one I've noticed that people do.
Vitamin pills, looking up exes on Facebook, that's very dangerous. You know, then you have the more kind of dramatic, well, sports cars aren't so dramatic, but sleeping with the nanny can rear its ugly head.
So always hire
a sort of, I don't know, a big hairy German or something to look after your kid. I don't know what the solution is.
51551. There's any hairy Germans annoyed with that one. What was I going to say? Also, there is a realisation about where we are in terms of the last 5 years, etc., just in Ireland, in terms of, like, you know, you're probably never going to be able to pay the mortgage. You're probably never going to be able to retire. Mm. And they can hit you pretty hard, considering you might have thought you would have. You're only doing this sitting at a desk for 30 years and not 50.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people, you know, had if they had any spare money, might have had it in shares and that, and that's all gone as well. So yeah, your security blanket has been ripped from under your feet, absolutely.
Well, look, flattery will get me everywhere. So here goes. You're way too young to have actually experienced a midlife crisis. So if one has a midlife crisis and one is like worried about whatever, like, I'm going to give you, I had one at 28, as in, you know, say at the age of 18, I felt I was about 17. At 24, I felt I was 18. 26, I felt I was 18. 28, I felt I was 18. And then I'm looking at the figures. If in 2 years' time I'm going to be 30, and if that 18 was 10 years ago, literally there was an epiphany one day going, crikey, this thing is short. Yeah. I better go out and enjoy myself even more than I already am. So I did. Is that a midlife crisis?
Of course it is. You can have it at any age, absolutely. I suppose the key is to how you manage it. I think in a way it's probably important to accept it and realise what it is and try not to panic. Obviously easier said than done. But I do think people feel very kind of weighed down with, you know, mortgages. Some people have school fees, work. Maybe your career hasn't worked out quite the way you wanted it to. And, you know, when you're looking
at... Which is the usual, frankly.
Yeah,
and
I
also,
think
you know, the only time you read a book is on holidays. And that's another one you say, why am I doing that? You know, and I used to read so much more of whatever. But I mean, like, also the only gigs you go to are reunion tours. And the only time you hear the bands you like are on classic hits radio. That kind of thing.
Or there are people switching, you know, from Radio 1 to Spin to try and get down with the kids.
And that's the crisis. Yeah. Stop fooling yourself. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, of course, you panic about health issues that you mightn't have done before as well.
Well, I think things start to ache and twinge and, you know, fall apart. And as you said, you know, I think losing a parent certainly makes you face your own mortality a lot as well.
Yeah. Is there the bigger philosophical question, do you think, of who am I and why am I here? And you see these ads. You ever see those ads in the front of the Irish Times or the back of the like thing? You know, a philosophy course, 12-step program, find out who you are and what it is, etc. And you think, well, why don't I sign up for this and see who I really am? Is that a midlife crisis?
Well, I think this is part of it. And also mindfulness. You know, everyone's doing mindfulness courses now.
Oh, yeah. Because the mindfulness was great. That's also the new golf.
That is. That's the new yoga.
Let's take it then. Like, you know, the subtle signs then. Do you think there are signs that are there and that if you, like everything, prevention better than cure, if you can prevent it from taking over your life and going to Eritrea like your person in the book?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you notice some restlessness, dissatisfaction with your life, suddenly you find your life where you had found it perfectly fine, you find it very boring and mundane. I think it's kind of looking for excitement, kind of hope, trying to relive your youth. Oh, they're all kind of signs of a midlife crisis. And again, you know, like I think for women, it can often be empty nest syndrome. You know, when you're not needed anymore, when your children are around, you know, you feel needed, you feel worthy, I suppose. And it kind of gives you a sense of purpose. And when you lose that, I think a lot of women find themselves very lost. And that can be tricky too, you know, because it can also often come in parallel with the menopause. So that can, you know, that can be tricky and hard to manage.
All right, 51551 is our text at 11 minutes past 9 and we are talking to Sinead Moriarty. The new novel is called The Way We Were. It's about the 11th, is that right?
It's the 11th.
By the way, when you're there in front of your computer and you're doing this, that and the other, burning the midnight, whatever it happens to be, and then eventually this thing arrives in the post, which is a hardback copy of your work with maybe even a dust sleeve on it as well. Do you still feel, oh my God, look what I created? Or is the first one was the big one?
Oh God, no, I actually think you appreciate it more because you realise how hard it is.
Yeah.
The first one is lovely because there's no pressure, no expectation. Obviously that changes over time. No, it's almost as joyful as having a baby.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, you've just delivered this thing. I mean, like, I remember, what was it we used to learn in economics? The law of diminishing returns. Imelda Marcos, her first set of shoes or her 94th set, does she get the same amount of pleasure from the 94th? Discuss. Anyway, bored guys with their boring wives virtually live on the golf courses, especially when they retire. Wow,
okay,
fair enough.
Right.
All right, thank you. I don't know if that came in from a male or a female. Davey, looking over my shoulder in the office, just looking up my ex on Facebook. Yikes, that comes in from Mary. Oh, wow, great. Your author's smug comment on male cyclists blows her credibility on this topic out of the water. I'm 60 years old and wear cycling gear because it is comfortable and designed for the purpose. That's from Pat in Dunshockton. Disgusted.
Fair play to you, Pat. Fair play to you.
I was just going to say comment on that, and you commented very well. What a racist comment from that woman. The least hairy people I know are those tall, svelte Germans. Fantastic. I'm in the middle of my crisis. I got a brace of tight train tracks. Oh, right. At 48. Ah, fantastic. I know loads of people like the Neil Youngs of this world and that. He kind of has a train that goes all across his land. It doesn't matter anyway. And let's take a look at what you're talking about here in terms of further things. And like the idea for the novel came from just that idea of a midlife crisis kind of thing. A book a year of 11 books or so thereabouts. Do you think when you were starting out that you were ever going to get to book number 2, 3 or 4, let alone 8, 9 or 10? 10?
No, I think it's like any project. You just look to the end of the project, really, and then hope for the best. I mean, obviously, I hoped that it would be a career that I could continue with. I didn't think I'd be lucky enough to do it full time and that it would last this long. And God, touch wood, it'll keep going. But, you know, I mean, I say this a lot, but I do feel very lucky to love what I do. You know, I don't find it hard to be disciplined because all I want to do is just be in my at my desk writing because it's a mental switch off.
That's fantastic. You don't find it hard to be disciplined. So it's not necessarily there is a deadline. It has to be delivered by Friday at midday. It is now Wednesday and I have four more chapters to write. It's not like that at all, is it?
Well, no, because I like what I do.
You were in school, were you?
I probably have slight like girl guy tendencies, yeah.
Another great answer. Okay, by the way, you were a journalist before you became a novelist. So creative writing, is that what we're talking about? Like, did you get into that? Did you do a course? Did you do it with other people who said, isn't that a lot of crap that you're writing there, missus?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we have women reinvent themselves every decade, and I was writing for a marketing magazine, and to be honest with you, the material was pretty dull, and I just thought, I'm going to go out of my mind if I don't do something creative. So I joined a creative writing course, yeah. And, you know, my first two attempts at novels failed miserably, and that was, I consider that my apprenticeship. And so then my third book was the one, The Baby Trail, was my first book to be published.
But hold on, your first two failed miserably,
yeah,
because other people said, this is not what we want, this is not good enough, this is not what
many,
I like.
Many people said no. Thanks.
That's not necessarily the point. Hold on a second. The point I'm trying to make here, that while one needs constant constructive criticism to improve one's writing, it doesn't necessarily mean that other people's opinion, that they know what they're blinking well talking about.
No, I would agree with you in the main, but when every single person you send it out to says, no, this is not for us. And you know what? It's fine, because they were right, because it wasn't good enough. That was my apprenticeship. It was my learning experience. And I got better, thankfully.
I know 1,000 people who made albums and every single record company said no. And then the one that said yes and the thing became one of the greatest things ever. So
maybe I'll dust them down, Dave. Maybe I'll take them out.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you know, no.
Go back. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you might have number 13 and 14 already written. Yeah. You still write for the Irish Indo. Is it important for you to continue that? Or, you know, that you need to do that kind of weekly thing, that deadline I'm talking about?
Well, I love my column for the Indo, you know, because writing a book is like a marathon and writing a column is like a sprint. It's a completely different muscle that you're exercising. Yeah. And, you know, it's fun. It's really good fun. I really enjoy it. And, you know, obviously the Indo is about more kind of immediate news stories and a novel.
Immediate news stories, as in, do you trawl the Huffington Post right up to the, you know, the Evening Herald and see what might be in there and say, hey, this is what people are talking about?
Pretty much, yeah. And I kind of think if I think that's interesting, hopefully other people will find it interesting. And, you know, it's everything from topical, serious issues to more kind of quirky things that I think people might be interested in. So, no, I love it. It's fun. It's great. Yeah.
Well, a serious issue, and some people would say quirky too. This morning you've got one. It's about breast reduction. Male breast reduction is a thing, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, it's actually quite a serious thing. I mean, a lot more women and men are having breast reduction now. Well, certainly for a man, teenage boys particularly, it's a nightmare because obviously if you develop breasts, you're going to get bullied. So it's an extremely serious issue. But it's a fairly straightforward operation now, and I think a lot more sort of boys in their late teens and early 20s are getting it done who suffer from male breast syndrome. And for women with very big breasts, it can actually cause horrendous back pain, neck pain and spine issues, spinal issues. And this all kind of came to light because the 17-year-old star of Modern Family had hers reduced because she was having like serious problems with her back. And I just think it's really great for other sort of, you know, young girls, young women to see that it is a fairly straightforward procedure.
God, Modern Family is on a permanent loop in our house all the time, and I still don't know which one is which. That's your woman, the older daughter.
She's the younger daughter, the really smart one. But they strapped her down and she wears very baggy clothes, you'll notice. So, and they used to strap her down to make her look smaller. So actually she just kind of went, okay, I think I've had it with this, and had this breast reduction. And it has changed her life and actually her physical health as well.
Okay, could I imagine that might be an easier thing to do in the States, but I'm not 100% sure. I just want to know, like, the surgery via the HSE, I presume if you go in and you say, I need this, I want this, there's some kind of a doctor who says, well, actually, I'm not going to do this because you don't.
Well,
you really have to prove it, do you?
It's not straightforward. You have to prove it. You have to prove it through your GP and through a surgeon that you actually need this for health reasons, you know.
And therefore, like, that your breasts are causing you serious physical and emotional distress has to be part of the equation.
Part of it. But, like, you know, if you have very big breasts, like, it can be the equivalent of having 2 litres of water on either side, carrying around 4 litres of water every day. No wonder you have back pain. You know, like, it actually can really, you know, cause problems in your day-to-day life.
Well, and like, a lot of women are going for this, but you're saying a lot of men as well, the men boobs thing. And the men boobs thing is because of what, overweight and being slagged to death in school?
No, it's not necessarily overweight. It's often a hormonal thing.
Yeah, exactly.
But all teenagers get it, but 90% of them lose it. But so the unfortunate 10% kind of get stuck with it. So, you know, it is nice to know that there are options out there, I think.
Right, yeah. Okay, well then, let's just get back to the book then, is there, because you are heading around the country promoting The Way We Were, and you've done all that sort of stuff before, I suppose, going to the major places in the bookshops. Is that fun, is it?
It's great fun because, you know, you spend most of your time in a tracksuit in front of a computer on your own, and it is a very solitary life. I kind of feel like a mole for sort of 8 months of the year, and then you get wheeled out and you sort of, you know, put on normal clothes and meet people, and it's actually really nice, to be honest.
And when the kids go back to school next week, from your point of view, is it easier to get down? I mean, like, I presume, are you a daytime or a burning midnight lamp person?
No, God, I can't stay awake past 10. No, I'm definitely a morning person. Yeah, and so my normal schedule is when they're in school, I write sort of whatever, those 5-6 hours. So yeah, summer has been tricky to try and carve out the time that I need. So I'm not that sad about back to school. I'm okay about it.
And internationally, outside of Ireland, how does Sinead do? I mean, is it a good
scene? Yeah, it's going well so far. Yeah, touch wood, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's going well. So long may that last as well.
And Hollywood knocking on the door, could it happen or would it? I mean, this one is made for it, especially when you can end on a cliffhanger at programme number 10 of that box set.
Yeah, well, listen, wouldn't that be lovely? Well, it hasn't happened so far, but you never know. You never know.
You never know, indeed. All right. Well, listen, look, thanks a million for talking to us on the programme this morning, and well done. Congratulations. It is number 11, as I say, and there's a lot more to come, I presume. You're
not
giving up.
Yes, lots of ideas. No.
All right. Well, listen, I'll tell you what, I'm going to do a competition here, because look, there's loads of texts here about, you know, midlife crisis stuff. And in fact, maybe we already have a winner and I haven't even given out the competition. I'm in the middle of my crisis. Yeah, I gave you that. Sorry, I got a wig. Nothing worse. Another one says, the problem with midlife crises is they often happen at the same time as empty nest syndrome. Yeah, well, I mean, empty nest syndrome can, you know, trigger the midlife crisis.
Absolutely.
And is the midlife crisis. What about my late life crisis? As a fit, active 76-year-old, the thought struck me the other day that in a mere 14 years, I would be 90. Yeah, well, that's the figures thing that I was mentioning earlier on when I had to wake up to the fact that at 28, I'm not 18. Midlife crisis, nonsense. It's all about creating adventures through life, keeping in touch, adapting changes as we age. As a woman in my 50s, I started a technology business and an online company called Stylish Arms. Oh, there's a good ad for that. Attire for covering women's arms, which I tarted, I presume that means started, six years ago. Loving it all. Exciting. I'm on my way to yoga. Ha! The new thing. No, wait, mindfulness is the new thing, and Pilates and all the rest. Anyway, listen, I'll tell you what I'm going to do, because I'm going to give a competition, which I have here now. The Way We Were is in bookshops now, of course. I should mention that, yeah. And you will be going to where and where?
Well, yesterday I was in Galway and Ennis in Limerick, and I was in Cork on Monday, so I've actually been around and about this week, so it's been lovely.
It's been lovely indeed. All right, well, listen, thanks a million.